Welcome to Good Returns TV. I'm Philip McAllister. Joining me in the studio is the new Minister of Commerce, Andy Bailey. Welcome, Andy. It's nice to have you here.
Lovely to be here with
you. Yeah, and it's I have to say, after following financial services for 30 years, it's actually nice to see a Minister of Commerce who's actually engaged in the sector, which has been missing quite a few times over the years. So it's good.
Thank you.
And obviously you've had a bit of experience in financial services.
Yeah, well, I've been 25 years in the insurance and financial services sector. I chaired a financial planning company for quite a few years as well. So, you know, so it does feel like a home part of it. But I think most importantly, you know, the financial services sector is such a big part of the economy, and getting the settings right is so important. For businesses in general, in terms of being able to get access to finance or whatever it might be.
So today I wanted to go through some of the things you've made two recent speeches, Financial Services Council and Financial Advice New Zealand. We'll start with COFI.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the election campaign, you were going to get rid of COFI and you've changed your mind now. Can you just give us a bit of your thinking about that?
Well,
why?
Refine my mind. So immediately after the election, I sat down with CEOs from some of the very large entities who are most likely to file their returns and or their applications. And so what they said to me is, look, Andrew, we have largely completed the work. You know, it's been a really expensive process. Even they acknowledge that. I'm talking about some of the largest banks and insurance companies. They said, look, we would like to go ahead and continue to file those applications. So I said, yes, that's fine. But there's potentially about 200 organisations that need to file their applications. And what I'd heard a lot of is probably 100 of those haven't actually started because they're so worried about the requirements, unclear about what FMA was going to ask them. So the second part of it was addressing those who haven't started the process or only just embarking on it, which is, look, first point of principle, you as the owner, director, manager of the business, you should work out what's proportionate in terms of conduct for your entity. It's not for the FMA to say that. But I've also spoken to the FMA about providing some guidelines about some particular minimum standards that all companies need to meet. And those cover basically how do you go about engaging with your customers? What are your fee arrangements? What are your complaint processes? And, you know, so those are the type of things that they're going
to
do.
So in talking to the previous CEO of the FMA, his view was that, you know, a lot of these big institutions just didn't have any regulation around what they do. Do you now agree that that's what they do need?
Oh, look, the thing about it is, and this is my more strategic point, if you look at the regulations, and you've said that I've come from the sector, I've watched the sector since the 2008 reforms that Simon Powell put in place. And we've had a succession of ministers who have put a new piece of legislation, no doubt thinking they were doing the right thing. And, you know, now in 24, I'm looking at it and going, look, the architecture of the financial legislation is now very complicated and overlapping. So that's my start point. So that's why I've said, let's go back to the Twin Peaks model. So we're going to have Reserve Bank doing prudential control, FMA being the sole conduct regulator, take the CCCFA conduct regulations off the ComCom and put it in FMA, move to a single license, and then COFI and all those other things come into that. So what I'm trying to do and what we want to do as a government is to make things simpler, easier to understand, and ultimately cheaper for people to operate, but not compromising standards around conduct.
Yeah. And so one of the things you talked about in your speeches and going back and reading them is that you were wanting to make financial advice more accessible to New Zealanders.
Yeah.
How do you think you're going to achieve that?
Well, this is the things I've talked about wanting to achieve that. But what I am very concerned about is if you ring up your stockbroker or even if you go and see your financial planning advisor, the rules now have got to a stage where many people say, oh, I can't advise on that. But that's actually a really bad thing for New Zealand, right? So it's great if a wealthy person like you, Philip, you can ring up your broker and they'll talk to you through because you've got a sufficient amount of funds, right? But what I'm very concerned about is people who are not super wealthy, they should be able to get access to good quality advice. So part of what I'm talking to the FMA about is that we've got to make sure that we don't just make everything white label, make it vanilla. We need to give access to by ordinary New Zealanders to a wide-ranging set of advice.
So by what you were saying before, you know, these changes don't actually achieve that, so you'll have other stuff to come further on?
I've got lots of other stuff to come.
Yeah, you obviously haven't heard about the state of the media industry recently.
Well, at least I'm going to keep you busy.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's good. So so financial advice and making it more accessible is one of your goals?
Yeah, I'm very keen on that.
And can we say there's more to come on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, it doesn't necessarily need to be a piece of legislation, by the way. It's just, you know, the emphasis, particularly what the role of FMA around that.
But there's a view that, you know, financial advice is really necessary for people, and particularly around things like KiwiSaver and things like that, and yet it's hard to get. And, you know, is there a role for the government to, like, incentivise the process so it is easier for people to get advice?
Look, it's not necessarily the role for the government, but what the role... for the minister, I think, is to make sure we've got the settings right and we've got the right emphasis. So I've said to the FMA, not only do we need to make sure that people can get access to advice, and particularly around KiwiSaver or whatever, because it shouldn't be just the wealthy, as I said, it should be mainstream advice, because that improves the wealth of all New Zealanders, which is what we're trying to achieve. But secondly, it's just really about making sure that there's good conduct that goes alongside that. And, you know, that doesn't need legislative change. It's just more being clear about the emphasis. And the other big thing I'm worried about is many people now don't want to be a director because we've got to a stage with a layering up of the legislation that many people look at the risks of being a director and going, well, if it's a very large, secure business, I might contemplate it. But actually we want experienced people to help our venture capital, you know, startup businesses and all that sort of stuff. So how do we deal with that issue is another one I'm very keen on.
But that's a really interesting one, because, like, under the new advisor regulation, which is basically a year old in a couple of days' time, you know, the people who are the directors of the FAPs now are taking all the responsibility for all their advisors who work underneath them.
Yeah.
So they're taking on a huge responsibility doing that, which might actually put off people wanting to come into the industry.
And the settings around that, again, are the areas that we might be looking at, because increasingly what we've seen come through in a lot of the financial services legislation is this personal liability of directors, personal life and inability to get professional indemnity, and also the inability, particularly in banking things, where if you make a technical mistake on a contract, you're actually the bank or financial institution's up for a whole raft of fees, right? So some of this is what I'm talking about, settings, trying to get the balance right.
So that's where your reforms to the Companies Act come in, but we're not going to go down that track today because we're not going to have time. Another time. One of the things which hasn't been picked up on much about in your speech to Financial Advice New Zealand is you were suggesting that having four external dispute resolution schemes is too many.
Well, my question around the four dispute mechanisms, so we've got Banking Association, which do a pretty good job. We've got an insurance one. We've got a financial services one, and we've got a fourth one, which is much smaller. What I'm keen is that where particularly borrowers end up getting, you know, being disadvantaged by bad borrowing practices, then there should be better procedures for resolving disputes. And there's my issue with it at the moment, across those four schemes, there's no clarity or where they all have the same amount of money they can award, so there are different levels of awards they can do. There's a few KPIs around how quickly they have to hear disputes, what's the process for it, all that sort of stuff. So I think there's a lot we could do to standardise the dispute mechanisms, because I think there are occasions where people need to get disputes heard quickly and resolved quickly.
And you were suggesting, though, that four were too many?
I think inevitably that question is, do we need four, and could we consolidate it and get better quality dispute mechanisms? And that's certainly something I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, that will be very interesting to see how that pans out. KiwiSaver, look, the majority of the industry seem to think that KiwiSaver is due for a major overhaul. It wasn't in your plans at the moment. Where does that fit in? And do you think that there should be a major overhaul?
Yeah, well, I alluded to it, because what I'm doing in focus right now, I've got triple CFA reforms come through. I've We've got the insurance contracts bill put in the House. We've got the customer data rights bill, which is part of allowing open banking. And then you've alluded to, I want to do the Companies Act reform, first time in 30 years. Later this year, when I get through all that, and the, most of that work stream's completed or near completion, is to focus on capital markets. So the thing about KiwiSaver and capital markets in general, so question is, how do we get more capital coming into businesses, New Zealand businesses? How do we make sure the financing around debt is appropriate? But also in that there's an issue around KiwiSaver as well. They have a part to play in terms of the capital markets. That's why I've been talking about opening them up to allowing them to invest more easily into great New Zealand businesses. But there's also the issue around the settings of KiwiSaver itself.
So when do you think you'll look at that?
Later this year.
Yeah, and do you think it will be difficult to do?
No, I don't think so. We, I've started having those conversations, but part of that is working with my coalition partners. You know, we're in a coalition government, and we need to make sure we've got the right settings. I think there's some areas where we could look at improving it, certainly.
So do you still think you'd continue with your policy of allowing people to split KiwiSaver providers?
Yeah, we put that out as a National Party policy. And when we were talking about that, we probably didn't explain it as well as we might. But what we were thinking is, in terms of future-proofing KiwiSaver, for people who say have got $300,000-$400,000 in a KiwiSaver account, and some people now have that, we were looking at saying in future you might be able to take half of that and put it into a separate. So the threshold for allowing that to happen.
So there
would
never
be $10,000. No, it was always intended, you know, a minimum probably $100,000, but possibly a higher amount before we'd allow that. And the reason behind that is, and I know there's a number of operators already offering that type of scheme, but people may want to change managers because you might be great as a KiwiSaver provider in terms of investing in Europe, but actually over here, these guys specialise in doing clean energy type investments, and actually they're the best managers of that. So that was giving that flexibility, but it was looking forward, but it would certainly have a very high threshold.
And of course, your other policy was allowing KiwiSaver to be used for bond deposits for
renters.
Yeah,
I'm not sure about that. Well, that's something we'd need to test for the coalition.
Yeah. So it wasn't that well received in the market, I think, when you put it out there.
Yeah, well, some young people like the idea of it.
Yeah, but they probably don't have a lot of KiwiSaver money anyway.
Yeah, well, if you ask me a more generic question, is we simply don't save enough for our retirement. The big issue we've got is that people are simply not contributing enough to KiwiSaver. And, you know, people forget, when you take money out, even if you're a 22-year-old and you're taking money out and you think it's only, you know, $1,000, in terms of discounted value of that money over a 40-year lifespan before you retire, or longer in that case, is probably worth, I don't know, run the numbers in my head, but, you know, $30,000 probably, or whatever it might be, right?
So I know KiwiSaver is later this year, but would you go down the Australian line of increasing contribution rates each year?
Well, look, that's all up for discussion. I haven't engaged yet with coalition partners on that.
Yeah. And so that brings me to sort of my final question. You've got a lot of work going on, which is quite impressive. We've got a government with three parties, and there's made a lot of promises across everything.
Yeah.
You know, how easy or how hard is it for you to get this stuff through cabinet and through parliament?
Hey, well,
I guess you've got a lot of competition.
Yeah, well, we have. And I was lucky enough to get something in the 100 days, even though it wasn't in the 100-day plan. You probably heard that last week we got rid of the Business Payment Practices Bill. I went to Cabinet and said, look, we don't stop this now. Not only is the government going to write out a multi-million dollar cheque, but industry is going to write out cheques probably for tens of millions. So we pushed that through in urgency because it needed to be done quickly to stop from people doing that. So you're right, the legislative framework going forward is going to be pretty tight because all ministers want to do stuff. I've got to just do what I can. But at least what my intention is to get the bills to a situation where when there's room in the House, they're ready to roll, i.e. they've had prior approval with Cabinet and whoever.
So am I interpreting that to say that you acknowledge that it's crowded, but you think that if you've got everything in place, you'll be able to get things through quickly?
Oh, yeah, but, you know, all the other ministers will be working through that. So, you know, we've just got to work it out. Chris Bishop, who's the leader of the House, he'll work out the prioritisation. But, you know, we've done our 90 days, our first 100 days. The Prime Minister's already flagged and publicly flagged. We're going to do this in quarters, basically. So we will have a pretty clear programme of what we're going to do next. Because we want to make change quickly. We're in a turnaround job. We've got to get New Zealand back on track.
Yep, good on you. Keep the party lines. look, thanks for your time and here. And it's been great to have you in the studio and no doubt.
And I'll come and talk to you about some of that other stuff when we've done it, like the Companies Act run.
I'll invite you back again.
Thank you.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you.